Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. It almost goes without saying that it's profoundly unsettling to see, upon walking out the door first thing in the morning, your home has been hit by eggs, to hear your children have been taunted at school because of their religious background, or to encounter a disturbing, I should say, piece of graffiti, say a swastika spray-painted on a piece of equipment at the playground. This is the reality for many Americans, including Muslims and Jews, who've been enduring a surge in hate and hate crimes recently, especially during the vitriol-filled presidential campaign of 2016 and immediately following the election of Donald Trump. At the same time, some groups of diverse backgrounds are setting their deep differences aside to come together to try to grow respect and relationships and friendship. The Sisterhood of Salam Shalom is one such group, bringing women of the Jewish and Muslim faiths together. Amber Khan is Secretary of the Board of Directors. Welcome to Radio Times, Amber.
Thank you, Mary. It's a pleasure to be here and to talk with you.
And Simi Ram Reimer is co-leader of the Sisterhood of Salam Shalom chapter in Washington, D.C. Welcome to you as well, Simi.
Thank you so much, Mary. It's great to be here.
And joining us in studio is Jacob Bender, Executive Director of the Philadelphia Chapter of the Council on American-Islamic Relations. Jacob Bender is Jewish and the first non-Muslim to hold such a high-ranking position within the organization. Good to have you back with us, Jacob.
Good afternoon. Good morning to you as well.
So let's talk first a bit about the Sisterhood of Salam Shalom. Salam and Shalom are, and correct me if I'm wrong about this, Arabic and Hebrew respectively, and both are greetings of peace. Amber?
Absolutely. So Salam is peace in Arabic.
And Shalom is peace in Hebrew.
And so the sisterhood really is about, I mean, capturing the essence of both these words, which is women coming together to, I think, as many would say, wage peace and to find peace together.
So Cheryl Olitsky, who is a co-founder, says in a video for the sisterhood, it's easy to hate someone you don't know. How does the sisterhood address this in women from very different backgrounds? Where do you start, Simi?
Well, I think where you start is by breaking bread together, something that I'm sure that all chapters do, and certainly it's very important for us in the D.C. chapter, is to sit down and have a meal together. That simple act really can bring people together, can start a conversation that kind of lays the foundation for future connections.
And so, Amber, how do you plan the meal?
Well, it's interesting. I think that the planning of the meals, like the planning of all activities in the sisterhood, really comes from conversation. What's amazing about the sisterhood, I think, is that it's not just the name that reflects the balance. Each chapter is limited to about 20 women that are equally represented by Muslim and Jewish traditions, and we strive for diversity within each. And the decision-making comes from co-leaders who facilitate. So we have one co-leader who's Muslim, one co-leader who's Jewish. And as the group comes together, it really is consensus and sharing. Like, where are we going to go? In my chapter, the first thing we decided is we all loved Mediterranean food. So we found a wonderful, Lebanese restaurant that we could all literally break pita with and spread some hummus, I think, would be something that we would all agree was a positive. So,
right. Well, Jacob Bender, let's bring you into the conversation. Again, you are head of the Philadelphia chapter of the Council on American-Islamic Relations. You are Jewish. Why this job for you?
Well, I've spent my entire adult life trying to do interfaith relations, working with various social justice causes and organizations. And from an early age, I always believed that I could fulfill myself as a Jew only by interaction with other people and to learn how other traditions influenced Jewish history and Jewish culture all through history. We sometimes have the mistaken belief that we can know our traditions only by studying ourselves. And the historical truth of the matter is that we enrich, not deprive our traditions, enrich those our self-understanding by learning how Jews interacted and borrowed and were gifted other traditions through their long history, wandering In the Mediterranean, in Europe, and in Far East Asia.
So you've been with the Philadelphia chapter of CARE? Is that how
CARE
we pronounce
CARE is the best way to
okay.
call us.
For about 3 years. What has been the reaction of the local Muslim faith community so far?
To you as a
Jewish person as the executive director.
When I started, which was 3 years ago, there was some perhaps shock is too strong a word, but some surprise in the Muslim community that the local chapter of CARE, a Muslim civil rights organization, the largest one in the United States, would hire an American Jew as their spokesperson, as their executive director. In the past 3 years, I have received nothing but the warmest, most gracious, welcoming that a person can imagine. And without exception, all parts of the Muslim community have been wonderfully accepting of my role and my dedication to trying to serve this community, which has witnessed and experienced very difficult times in the last 3 years, and particularly in this last year, and particularly in this last month.
Sure.
On the other hand, my welcoming to Philadelphia by my own community, by the Jewish community, was less sometimes than welcoming.
How so, Jacob?
Well, I think there was some trepidation that I would be serving as an apologist, which is not what I see my role as and not a role that I wish to undertake. And, of course, there has been a number of decades of tension between the Muslim and the Jewish communities.
Sure.
Because of the proverbial 800-pound gorilla in the room known as the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Yeah.
And I've tried my best to overcome that, to try to make bridges. And I think that judging by my reception in the Muslim community, I have been successful in that, and CARE as a wonderful organization, which I thank my good luck for working with every day.
So, Amber, when the sisterhood meets, does Israel come up?
You know, that's a great question. I think that as Jacob just said, part of the reality of the experience between Muslims and Jews in America has been the proverbial challenge of how to discuss issues in the Middle East. And the sisterhood really made a very intentional decision as the chapters were forming to agree to not discuss the Middle East until relationships were solid and until the friendships and being able to see each other and know each other would allow for a conversation that would not devolve and, frankly, divide. I don't know, yeah. Simi, if you have I see you shaking your head there.
Well, Simi, I was wondering if there's a protocol once that time does come around where you feel you can discuss something like this. Is there a way you go about it?
Sure. I wouldn't say that there's a protocol necessarily, but I can speak specifically for my chapter. And again, every chapter, I think, is dealing with this in different ways and has different desires around this particular issue. But in our chapter specifically, we were interested, as Amber was saying, in building these relationships. There are many, many places online and in the world, in real life, where people can talk about the Israel-Palestine issue. And we really wanted to have an opportunity for people to talk about other issues. There are so many things that Muslim and Jewish women can talk about that have to do with our daily lives here in the United States. And we really wanted to focus on that before getting into any other wider political issues. The other thing that I would mention is, again, for us, what was really important is when we decide that we want to talk about the conflict, we want to bring in a skilled facilitator. This is not something that my co-leader and I feel like we have the appropriate training for. So we want to bring in someone specifically who knows how to deal with this kind of very difficult, very complex discussion.
And to the protocol question, Mary, this is Amber again. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we're looking at is developing actually a resource that helps chapters engage in what we call courageous conversations. And that speaks to, again, our awareness of the sensitivities and the emotions that run very high when talking about the Israeli-Palestinian issues and conflict in the Middle East.
All right, Jacob.
in spite of the criticisms which CARE has received from both within and without the Jewish community, at least 90 to 95% of CARE's work in the United States is dedicated to domestic issues of combating Islamophobia, of teaching non-Muslims about Islam, about inviting non-Muslims into the Muslim community to actually get to know the Muslim people and their traditions and their beliefs. So it's only on very rare occasions that we dwell into foreign policy, and particularly the Middle East, Israeli-Palestinian conflict there. In fact, one of the positive results of the last year of widespread Islamophobia has been the coming together of Jewish and Muslim activists and community organizations across the country to respond to this new threat which has evolved and erupted in our country in the last year.
And I did want to get to that. I'd also like to get the telephone number out before we go there, 888-477-9499, if you'd like to join the conversation. You can also send us an email at radiotimes@whyy.org or a tweet at WHYY. Radio Times. So let's get to some of the hate crimes which have been reported. According to the FBI, hate crimes are up 67% against Muslim Americans in 2015. Jewish groups are also reporting an increase. And Amber, first to you, have you experienced anything personally, or have members of your family or friends experienced anything of this sort?
Yeah, I mean, I personally have not experienced anything in the last year, but unfortunately, members of my family have. And, you know, particularly members of my family who live in rural parts of the country, in Georgia and in Tennessee, you know, have shared experiences that are extremely troubling, but also remind, I think, all of us that we have a lot of work to do. I mean, fortunately, the experiences that they had were verbal harassment and accusations and being told they don't belong, and to which, you know, my members of my family said, this is my home. I was born here. You know, this is where do you see me going? And I think that the as a parent, I have to say that, you know, more and more kind of jokes that my kids relay back to me about, oh, you know, do you have an AK-47? You know, do you have a secret agenda? That sound like jokes. They sound like it's humorous, but in fact, are extremely disturbing and upsetting and really create a sense of insecurity. And the community that I belong to, you know, we have really come together on numerous occasions to try to create a safe space for parents to strategize and talk about how they're feeling and coping, but also to explore how we build relationships with others. I mean, I think that one of the experiences I've had and every one of my family members has had is that, you know, the day after the election, my neighbors came to check on me.
To see if you were doing okay.
Yes, to see if we're, and just to let us know. And that,
Amber,
I think, yeah.
I'm just going to have to jump in because we're up against the break, but we're going to pick up on that thought in just a moment here on Radio Times. Amber Khan, Simi Ram Reimer, both with the Sisterhood of Salaam Shalom, and Jacob Bender is with us as well with CARE. Stay with us. You're listening to Radio Times on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. We are talking about groups like the Sisterhood of Salaam Shalom. Muslim and Jewish women are gathering across the country to build bridges, to fight hate, to fight negative stereotypes. Amber Khan and Simi Ram Reimer are members, and they are here with us this hour. Also in studio, Jacob Bender is head of the Philadelphia chapter of the Council on American Islamic Relations, and he happens to be Jewish. Our telephone number is 888-477-9499 if you'd like to jump into the conversation. And you can also send us a tweet as well at WHYY Radio Times. And Amber, going into the break, you were just relaying how people in your community were coming together to, I guess, comfort you and to support you following some incidents, hate crimes, really, or hate speech or uncertain speech that could be considered Islamophobic.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that, you know, I wanted to share, Mary, is that the election rhetoric that really focused on demonizing and casting a suspicion on Muslims, you know, American Muslims, in a way that not only seeded insecurity, but I think created an environment in which individuals who have harbored feelings felt more comfortable in expressing them, has equally provoked, I think, a reaction among people of faith and goodwill, who I strongly believe is the majority of who we are. I think it has provoked them to not be complacent and to really look inward beyond their comfort zones and to talk about these things. I mean, I will say that, you know, the number of friends and neighbors, as well as former neighbors who I lived with years ago, calling and checking in on us and checking in on the kids, wanting to make sure that they knew that they were there for us and that they had our back and that the vitriol, that the rise in hate crimes was disturbing to them, that they weren't just sitting still. And I think that that reaction is actually the powerful story of where we're going. Yeah. You know, the opening up, I think, of these wounds has also challenged so many of us to do something. And we saw that at the Sisterhood Conference. I mean, it was an unprecedented experience for me. And I know Simi felt the same way.
And Simi, I'd actually read that news of hate crimes can bring images of, you know, Nazi Germany to mind for some people who are Jewish. Are you hearing this? And then how does the Sisterhood address this when they are meeting, say, at a local favorite restaurant?
Yes, I have heard that from local Jews and from members of the Jewish community in D.C. and elsewhere. You know, in addressing that issue in particular, I think what comes up more in our conversations is there are some experiences that Muslims are having now that Jews have gone through in the past in the United States specifically. And so kind of using each other's history and others' past experiences to help each other, where what Jews might have experienced 100 years ago, you know, some Muslims are experiencing now. So what can we as Jews do to help Muslims kind of navigate the path that we have unfortunately also have had to navigate? And I think, again, that those shared experiences also make our bonds stronger. I also wanted to just speak very briefly to what Amber was saying before in terms of neighbors checking in on her. You know, I actually partially watched the election returns with members of the Sisterhood over our WhatsApp group. And just the outpouring of support and affection for each other was really something very powerful and something special that I definitely would not have been able to be a part of if I weren't part of the Sisterhood. And it gave me kind of that extra kind of support that I needed.
But Jake, it goes.
Oh, go ahead,
I'm
Amber.
Sorry, Mary. Sure. I just wanted to share that, like, in Philadelphia, we have Sisterhood chapters. And there was an event that, you know, that was in response to a hate crime that targeted a house of worship in Philadelphia.
Yes.
And, members of the Sisterhood joined. And one of the members had shared very personally that had it not been for the relationship she had in the Sisterhood, she wouldn't have had the comfort or the sense of security to be able to join and stand in solidarity. And in doing so, it was not only fulfilling, but she felt extraordinarily connected and able to stand in solidarity fully with her Muslim, you know, neighbors.
Jacob Bender, if hate crime perpetrators were to be caught, what do you think the penalty should be?
That's a difficult question. First, they should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. Yeah. But there's an ongoing discussion within the legal and civil rights community as to whether labeling a crime as a hate crime should enlarge the penalty. And I know that, you know, the ACLU has very also mixed feelings about this as well. I wanted to go back to one point, though, about the history that Simi mentioned. Not only do Jews and Muslims share this memory of persecution and how the persecution evokes Jewish fears, but on the far more positive side, we also share hundreds of years of living together throughout the Mediterranean world, where Jews and Muslims and Christians, particularly in medieval Spain, but other places around the Mediterranean as well, created a joint and a cross-fertilized civilization, and that many American Jews have no idea that for at least 800 years, the language of the Jewish people was not Hebrew, was not Yiddish, but was Arabic. Mm. Arabic was their daily language, their language of business, their language of philosophy. Mm. And that to speak of a Judeo-Islamic civilization from Spain all the way to Iraq is not an exaggeration by any stretch of the one could hope for.
And what I'd like to do, if we have time this hour, is get to a documentary that you produced. I'm thinking focusing on that very issue. But I do want to just follow through on an earlier question and ask Simi and Amber about this. So, you know, what do you think the penalty should be for people who commit hate crimes, and perhaps not as much legalistically, but should there be an education portion, a component, that's the word I'm looking for, to this? Simi, what do you think?
Amber, I think, would like to go ahead first.
Sure. If you don't mind if I jump in.
Absolutely.
I think that there are a couple of things that I just want to point out. I think that the work and the designation of a hate-motivated crime has a significant – I think it has a – it bears significance because of the nature of the crime. It's not simply intended to impact one member of our community, but rather to have this ripple effect within a community. And it is, I think, really important that we encourage law enforcement agencies to report bias crimes. I think the enforcement is critical to ensuring that we are discouraging and ensuring that there is no impunity for engaging in hate-motivated violence and the targeting and desecration of symbols and houses of worship that are of meaning and have a ripple effect within a community. The question you're asking about what should be done, I think, bears two responses. One, I think that the individuals who are accused and prosecuted and found guilty of crimes need to be held to account. And I think that that is essential and involves law enforcement engaging and participating in not only monitoring and tracking, but enforcing.
Yeah.
But the second is the Department of Justice has a community relations service that is specifically focused on after hate crimes take place to work with local communities to facilitate conversation and, frankly, diffuse tension. Yeah. And I think that the role that they have played in numerous communities after anti-Muslim and even anti-Semitic, anti-LGBT events is really important, and I hope will be a role that continues over the next 4 years.
Yeah, the reason I brought up education was because Cheryl Olitsky, again, who helped to form the Sisterhood Group, is quoted as saying, ignorance is one of the key triggers of hate. Jacob, what does CAIR do in this, C-A-I-R do in this sort of instance?
Well, I would certainly agree with you that ignorance is one of the causes for hate crimes, for discrimination, for fear. And in response, CAIR has launched numerous initiatives. We go around the city and organize workshops, both for Muslims and non-Muslims. For Muslims, we have workshops how to respond to bullying on the schoolyard or in workplace. We have organized workshops called Know Your Rights workshops, where we teach Muslim youth how to respond both to law enforcement officials, and to any challenges they may face. We also have numerous workshops which we present around the city to churches and to synagogues and non-Muslim institutions called Islam 101, where people can invite local Muslim scholars in to teach them about Islam, and so they don't fall into the common trap of seeing Islam as intrinsically anti-democratic or anti-violent, and they learn about the tolerance and the culture and the pluralism embedded within the Islamic tradition. These workshops are available free of charge from CAIR throughout Philadelphia.
All right, we've got calls and comments coming in to 888-477-9499. And also, you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let's get to a few of these. Email from Ron. As a Jew, I believe that the recent election season has given even more reason to bring Muslims and Jews together. We've got a comment from a listener who asks, does the organization include Christians? And we're talking about two organizations here this hour. So, Simi, is it open really primarily to these two faith groups, or is it open to other faith groups as well, the sisterhood?
Well, that's an excellent question. For the chapters are specifically Muslims and Jews only. We feel that there is a certain kind of experience that both groups have lived and want to create a space for women of Jewish and Muslim faith to come together specifically to talk about those experiences. That being said, we always welcome allies from all different faith communities. And in our national conference, we have had Christian women and women of other faiths. So if anyone is interested who is not of Jewish or Muslim faith to be involved with the sisterhood, we welcome them with open arms.
Jacob Bender, I think you mentioned earlier in the hour that the Council on American Islamic Relations does work with Christian groups as well.
Absolutely. We have numerous churches and denominations which we've worked with across the city. And one of the reaffirming events, phenomena which have happened since the election is that we have received dozens of calls from both individuals and organizations, non-Muslim individuals and organizations, offering support, offering help, anything we, you know, that they get on the phone saying, this is just so horrible, what's being said about Islam and about the Muslim community, particularly the idea of a national registry evokes a very clear fears within American Jews. And the Muslim ban as well. And so we have received, a large number of calls and letters offering support because, as one of our earlier guests said, we believe that the majority of people in this country are really committed to the full understanding of the Bill of Rights and the Constitution that offers all people protection and security and freedom.
Yeah. All right, to the phones we go. Susan in Philadelphia, welcome to Radio Times.
Yes, hi. I have an idea that I'd like to share with those who are listening and also your guests. And it resulted because of the amount of hate before and after the election that surfaced. It's called an unlikely lunch. And it's an invitation to gather and break bread with whoever is the other, people different from ourselves, maybe racially, ethnically, politically, or other distinctions such as sexual preference, age, class, you name it. Mm. Even young people and students could create an unlikely lunch in their cafeterias.
Susan, I want to thank you for we're up against a break here in a moment or two. Thank you so much for sharing that concept with Radio Times. And I do want to get some reaction from our guests. Amber Khan, sharing a meal seems to work for the sisterhood.
It does. And I'll tell you why, because while I'm a huge believer in and have done many 101s on this is the basic fundamental beliefs of Islam, the reality, I think, is that it's relationships and understanding how faith is expressed and lived in our lives that really fights against the hate-filled narratives that we are seeing in our culture and in our dominant narratives. And the reason why breaking bread works is because it's not just something you read. It's not like a lesson plan. It's how we live. It's the things we value, and it's the stories we share. And I think that's powerful.
And Simi, so it works. But again, a bit of a primer, if you would, because human beings being human beings, even if we gather in good faith, if we're different, it can sometimes be difficult to talk about issues and come together. So what is your advice?
I think that if you're going to participate in something like this, you come with A, an open mind, and B, you bring your own experience. You're not trying to tell everybody's story. You're trying to tell your own story. And that's something that Cheryl Alitsky, the founder, talks often about, and it really holds true. When you come and you bring your experience and someone else brings their experience and you commit to listening over lunch, over a relaxed meal, that's how friendships get formed, and that's really how changes take place.
Let's go to Manaz in Wallingford, Pennsylvania. Welcome to Radio Times, Manaz.
Thank you.
So what's your question or comment?
So my question was that what is being done in order to combat this new tide of hate that we're on in terms of middle school and high school, infusing education and literature into our curriculum? For example, do our children understand why drawing a swastika is offensive? Do people understand why asking Muslims to register is not only unconstitutional, but how that harkens back to a time in history where the same was done to Japanese internment camps? Yeah. Are we sharing this information with our young students?
Good question. And let's give that one to Jacob Bender to start.
Yes, it's a wonderful question. CARE has been undertaking a series of school presentations throughout the Delaware Valley, both in Philadelphia and the suburbs, to talk to both students and educators and the adult staff about Islam, about Islamophobia, about how the Muslim community responds to such threats as a national registry and a ban on Muslim immigrants. And there can be no greater gift to future understanding and improved relations than talking to youth about their Muslim brothers and sisters who are neighbors of them.
And Amber, does the Sisterhood of Salaam Shalom reach out to young people?
Absolutely, because we're women. Many of us are parents. We're mothers. We're sisters. We're aunts. We're uncle. Not uncles. We're aunts. We're grandparents, grandmothers. And you know, something that Cheryl, when I first learned about the Sisterhood, something that Cheryl had said to me, which really appealed to me when I was talking about, well, how do you know this works? You know, in terms of change, and it's this experience of, you know, when she shares how when she learned something and how she's seen it in others, and I have seen it in myself when I know my sister who's Jewish is struggling with something, and I share that and humanize and let my children and my family and people in my life know about her experience. It brings them to life as being the same. And I think that that becomes the entree for being able to tackle some of these larger challenges within the educational system.
We'll be back in just a moment here on Radio Times talking about different faiths building bridges. Stay with us. Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. In this hour, we are focusing on the efforts of a number of different groups, Jewish and Muslim folks who are reaching across, crossing bridges to find commonality in their faiths and in their daily lives. We've got Simi Ram Reimer of the Sisterhood of Salaam Shalom, also Amber of the Sisterhood. And Jacob Bender is with us here in studio. He's head of the Philadelphia chapter of the Council on American Islamic Relations, and we've got some lines open. 888-477-9499 is the number to call, but we're going to go to the telephones right now and bring Duffy in Philadelphia into the conversation. Hi, Duffy. Do we have Duffy? Okay, so we apparently don't have Duffy. Let's get to a tweet from Anita, who says, African Americans have been victims of American hate for over 400 years. She asks why this particular group of people are being ignored by these groups, but are they? And are there African American members of, say, the Sisterhood and also CARE? So first to you, Amber.
Yes, I think that's a really – Duffy's question is a really important one, and I think it's a misnomer. I think it kind of speaks to one of the issues that I think most people don't think about when they think about who is a Muslim in America. And the reality and the truth is that American Muslims include African Americans who were the first Muslims, frankly, in America. And the Sisterhood chapters include African American Muslim women who bring the intersection of all of their experiences just as the other members do. do. But I think her point is an important one, and I think it also underscores some of the challenges that we've heard, particularly from African-American Muslims, who confront not only some of the challenges of the racism, but also the religious bigotry and the kind of the intersection of those identities, and the struggle to address them can be really challenging and isolating. So great question, but I think it's important to note that African-Americans and African-American Muslims are definitely a part of this as well.
Jacob, your take?
Not only a part, but African-Americans are, in fact, the majority of Muslims in the Philadelphia area. According to various studies, close to 200,000 Muslims live within the Philadelphia city limits, and most of those are, in fact, African Americans. But the question brings up the fact that what we see now as the eruption of Islamophobia is nothing new within American history. The same canards, the same insults which are directed against Muslims now were 100 years ago directed against American Catholics, who were accused of being un-American. Catholicism was accused of being incompatible with democracy. The same sort of language we see now being directed against American Muslims.
So what is at the root of this? Fear of the unknown, Jacob?
Well, many historians have talked about the original sin of racism and slavery at the bedrock of America, which always formed the contradiction between our espousal of freedom and liberty for all and the historical actuality that this country was based upon slavery at its inception and during the writing of the Constitution.
All right. Let's get to a much lighter question. Simi, to you, where do men fit into the picture with the sisterhood of Salam Shalom? I noticed some masculine faces at the dinner table in some of the video footage that you have online.
Well, you know, men can be wonderful allies. I think this is, you know, the fact that this is about women coming together with other women is not meant at all to push men away. I think that, you know, again, we had, as you know, we had men at the national conference. Many of us are married to men, and it's something we welcome their support and their help in many, many different ways.
And at events, when we do events like hold during Ramadan, when we have communal iftars at the end of the break fast, and we'll invite our sisters, it's a family event. So families will join. So we'll see, you know, men participate as well as sons. So I think that it's absolutely inclusive in the way that Simi is describing, but also I think the relationship, the genesis of the relationship and the bridge building begins with the women.
Okay, let's get to the phones once again. Shazia in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And Shazia, I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly.
Hi. First of all, I think the sisterhood is a great concept. However, I was wondering, how can it really claim to be neutral on Israel and Palestine when they had Cory Booker speak at a recent conference? Mr. Booker expressed strong support of Israel during the assault on Gaza in 2014. Also, I feel Arab American Muslims are underrepresented. I see a lot of South Asian American Muslims in these chapters. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call to Radio Time. So Amber, do you want to field that one?
Sure. I mean, we have Muslims from a variety of traditions, including Arab Americans, as well as South Asians and African Americans and white converts. I think Shazia's question about the position in terms of the organization, you know, the sisterhood of Salam Shalom does not take a position. It's not a political organization that's taking a position on foreign policy issues. The national conference was a powerful gathering, and we were in Senator Booker's home state, and he had attended to welcome us. I heard his entire speech, and at no point do I recall a mentioning of foreign policy, but rather galvanizing and standing up to talk about the need to combat the culture of hate and the demonizing of the other. The challenges, I think, of being diverse and the intentionality in how we form the sisterhood is something that each co-leader takes seriously. seriously. And I hope listeners, if they're interested in learning more and wanting to join, we have over 1,400 women who've signed up since the election and since the conference, really ready to participate in forming a chapter, and absolutely are encouraging and inviting members of the diversity of all those communities, including Arab Americans.
Yeah, thanks for the call to Radio Times, Shazia. Jacob Bender, you are a television and video producer as well. Tell us a bit about the documentary you directed 7 years ago called Out of Cordoba. Just briefly, what was the focus there?
The focus and the idea for the documentary came after 9/11, after the attacks, which when I was living in Manhattan during the attack. And many people after that began to talk about something that they referred to as a clash of civilizations. And by this, they meant that there was an unending clash between the West, freedom-loving West, and the totalitarian East represented by Islam. Mm. And because I knew there was a different side to that history between Jews and Muslims and Christians in Spain and around the medieval Mediterranean, I wanted to bring a story to the public that showed the cross-fertilization, showed the sharing, showed the living together that Jews and Muslims experienced during that time, and also how Muslim rulers welcomed in Jews from fleeing from Christian Spain. And so the movie focuses on the two greatest thinkers to come out of Muslim Spain, a Jew by the name of Moses Maimonides and his Arab counterpart known as Averroes or Ibn Rushd in the Arabic. And the film is available through CARE, free of charge in Philadelphia.
So just how do we apply then, briefly, the thinking of Maimonides and Averroes to today's world in which extremism is engendering so much fear and backlash?
It's a wonderful and totally relevant question. First of all, they were both products of this jointly created Jewish-Muslim society. And contrary to popular conception, Jews reached the highest echelons of Muslim society across the Mediterranean as generals, as viziers, as economic advisors to the local royalty at the time. Second of all, both Averroes and Maimonides pushed the idea of reason within their respective traditions,
reason,
and that got them a lot of criticism, both of whom had their books burned, not by people outside of their traditions, but internally within their own communities. And this shows that there is a constant need to form alliances across religious boundaries.
And based on reason and fellowship?
Reason and fellowship and revelation. Some of the closest relationships Jews have established, and myself included, has been not only with people within our own community, but people who share the same values of peace and justice and freedom within other communities as well.
Amber and Simi, do you talk about the Hebrew texts, the Quran, when you meet? Do you try to learn about each other's religious texts? Simi, first to you.
Sure. Yes and no. We have not actually done a text study, which is something that we would like to do. But we do talk about it in other ways. It's interesting. I was just thinking back to the original question that you were asking us about the importance of breaking bread. And the act of breaking bread itself is important, but also what we learn about each other's faith tradition. Something that has come up is, you know, what is kosher and what is halal, and how does that work into our own lives, and kind of navigating those different paths just in terms of planning a simple meal or cooking together, which is something that we've done. And so I think it's through those ways that we've been entering into each other's traditions and explorations of faith.
Have you found some surprising commonalities, Amber?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was going to say that I think that one of the things that was, I think, really powerful is when we can see not only similarities in tradition and in values, but even in the words. I mean, for example, you know, one of the areas where there's a tremendous amount of crossover is the shared commitment to taking care of the most vulnerable and to supporting through, you know, acts of kindness and generosity the least fortunate in our communities. And tzedakah and tzedakah are two practices within both our traditions, and it is actually the inspiration for a community service day that Sisterhood Chapters organized this year. Several are doing that, but you know, so it's absolutely this space to discover where the commonality is and then to take it to the next level in terms of whether it's deciding what the menu is going to look like or finding ways to express our desire to support the community in which we live as an act of faith. So the learning about each other is absolutely powerful, and it helps relationally. But the text study question that you're asking at our national conference was an amazing opportunity to hear from scholars who did offer textual analysis for those who are interested in diving deep. And it was beautiful and enlightening. And also, I think, for some of us, an opportunity to see our own traditions in a different light.
Yeah. All right, we've got time for one more call. Let's go to Elkins Park and Joan. Hello, Joan.
Hi. I'm a member of Knesset Israel Synagogue in Elkins Park. Mm-hmm. And we have a regular gathering of Jews and Muslims. Members of our synagogue attend an iftar dinner at our synagogue. Muslim men come and pray at our synagogue, and we join together in bonds of friendship. We talk about who we are, what we are like, and this is one of the most exciting things I've ever experienced at Knesset Israel Synagogue under the leadership of Rabbi Lance J. Sussman, who has fostered many interfaith relationships.
So, Joan, just quickly,
just quickly,
what prompted this these gatherings? Do you know?
You know, I can't speak for Rabbi Sussman, but I know that his philosophy is outreach, reaching out to others, the other, and learning that we're not really very different.
Joan, thanks so much for the call to Radio Times. We appreciate it. So, Amber, would you say you have friendships now that go beyond the effort to reconcile faith differences?
Absolutely. I mean, I have to share with you that, you know, on a personal level, the first time I met someone who was Jewish was when I was a kid at a summer camp, standing in cafeteria line, wondering if I could ask whether the hot dog had pork or beef, and kind of anxious about the line I was going to hold up as I was inquiring to a very frustrated cafeteria worker. And the boy behind me said, "Don't worry, I need to know too." and that started a friendship that really for me kind of began my journey, and the sisterhood has been an expression of it. It's been an opportunity to get to know and to see and remind me eternally the point that Joan just made, which is that sometimes we are driven to think about each other as different, and we forget to see the tremendous commonality that we have and the shared values that make us neighbors and make us part of the shared community, you know, in our respective places. And I value that.
Interesting sentiments, compelling sentiments going forward as we change administrations.
Yeah, speaking of, within Hebrew tradition, tzedakah means not only giving charity, but tzedakah is also the word for justice. And as we confront the next 4 years in this country, the commonality of belief and the affirmation of universal justice will be tested, as it has never been before, I think, for many groups within this country. And keeping alive that flame of justice is the great task before us. It's a task that CARE is dedicated to. It's a task that the Muslim community and the Jewish community will have to join bonds and struggle together in these next couple of difficult years. And so to all of you here and in the studio, shalom and salam.
Thank you. On that note, we're going to wrap it up on a nice note to go out on. Jacob Bender, Executive Director of the Philadelphia Chapter of the Council on American-Islamic Relations and the first non-Muslim to hold such a high-ranking position within the organization. We appreciate you joining us today. And Amber Khan, a real pleasure as well. Thanks so much for spending some time with us here at Radio Times.
Thank you, Mary.
Amber Khan is Secretary of the Board of Directors for the Sisterhood of Salam Shalom. And Simi Ram Reimer, great to have you with us as well.
Thank you so much, Mary.
Simi is co-leader of the Sisterhood of Salaam Shalom chapter in Washington, D.C. And as always, don't forget, check out our Facebook page and podcasts. You can find them by visiting whyy.org/radiotimes. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Great to have you along for Radio Times.